Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Primetime on Money FM 89.3. I'm Howie Lim. And even before the pandemic, the evidence and business case for flexible work had been building. Multiple studies had connected working flexibly with improved productivity and revenue. Importantly, flexible work supports diversity and inclusion, and specifically gender equality. It unlocks women's and other caregivers' workforce participation, taps into a broader talent pool, and helps achieve gender balance in leadership, which research shows markedly improves business profitability. For more insights, we speak to Agathe Gross, partner at Bain & Company. She also leads diversity, equity, and inclusion in Australia. Agathe, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
So here's hoping, right? Do you think the changes the pandemic has brought about with regard to the workplace will be permanent? Should it be permanent?
Yes, that's a very good question. And we've seen the change has been so important over the last year that I would say, I mean, I have no proof right now, but some of the changes that have happened will be permanent. They're probably not going to be permanent at the current scale of change, because that's still being driven by necessary lockdowns in many countries. But the idea that work can be done flexibly, I think, is here to stay. The myth of lower productivity when working from home has been dispelled, and a lot of workers want to retain some flexibility that they've gained in the last year. For example, we ran a study in the US late last year, and more than half of the respondents said that they would want a remote work arrangement once COVID is over and they get back to what we now call the new normal.
Yeah,
maybe one or two or even just full days of remote work or flexible hours. But more than half of the people want the change to last. Obviously, that will vary by industry, by type of jobs, by the activities that are performed. I mean, there's some that can't be done from home, obviously, or some that can't really have flexible hours. But even if we look at some jobs, there are some jobs that a year ago you wouldn't have thought could be done from home. And COVID has proven that they can. And I'll use the example of call centers. Your traditional view of a call center is everyone in a big open space with their tech and their phone and big screens to show how calls are incoming and who should pick them up and so on. A lot of companies have had to move their agents to work from home. For example, in the recent piece of research on flexible work, we talked to Telstra, who early last year had to implement what they called their Agents at Home program. They had to equip all their call center agents with the right tech, phone systems to enable them to work from home because they couldn't come in those big call centers. So that's the remote work aspect of it. If we look at the flexible work aspect, we also talked to IAG, and even before COVID, implemented a very flexible way of approaching call center shifts, where their employees have an app. They can choose the shifts that they want to cover. And so, I don't know, for example, if you have children that you're taking care of, then you can decide that you're going to work from 10 to 2 because that's sort of the bulk of the time at which they're at school, and then you would opt out of the other shifts. So that's been really interesting to see. You then asked me whether it should be permanent. And my answer is definitely yes. I would caveat that, though, that it needs to be done really carefully so that it doesn't disadvantage groups of people over others. For remote working, how as a company do you make sure that your remote workforce is still included and still visible in meetings? As a team, how do you accommodate your norms so that part-time workers don't get left out? And if you look at the gender side of it, and we can come to it a little bit later, we think that women are more likely to take flex options. As a result, if they are working remotely, or if they are working part-time with flexible hours, then they need to ensure that they are still very much present, and that the hybrid model doesn't mean that, and I'm just caricaturing here, obviously, that all the men are in the office and sort of working together and being very visible, and then the women are left out.
Because there have been issues, since you bring it up, that have arisen. Many thought this would be the great equalizer for women, the flexible work arrangement, but there have been other responsibilities that women have had to bear, even while still working and working hard, be it at home. They are shouldering many more responsibilities, and that's been a strain, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. I totally agree. And there's been a lot of research on the fact that COVID has had and will continue to have a more adverse impact for women and actually for other minority groups in the workplace. And that's for a variety of reasons. So women, especially young women, have more caring responsibilities at home and at work. And so a lot of healthcare workers are women. They're also overrepresented in precarious employment and in jobs that have been hit more severely by the pandemic. So travel, hospitality, retail, a disproportionate amount of women have actually lost their jobs in the pandemic. And so really the issue of women employment and their financial security has been exacerbated by the pandemic. So that's one aspect of like the fact that COVID really has not been a great equalizer. The other one is if we look at women who are still currently working, who have not been disproportionately impacted from a job perspective by COVID, flexible work in COVID may also present a disadvantage. If you work from home, if you work with flexible hours, you're less visible at work. You're less able to walk the halls and promote the great work that you've been doing. You're less likely to be pulled into that random but critical meeting just because you happen to be walking by at the right time.
Yeah.
And what this will do is it will result in a risk for female promotions and for actually moving that growing pipeline of female workers all the way to the top, which we know is an issue, especially in the market that I've been looking at, that is Australia.
We're speaking with Agathe Gross, who's partner at Bain & Company. She also leads diversity, equity, and inclusion in Australia. So let's talk about, Agathe, how this flexibility can be flexible and how we can tread carefully. You were mentioning you can't just slap flexi work hours. There are risks that'll come as a result. Like you mentioned, all the men in the office and all the women at home.
Mm-hmm. Look, the flexibility of flexibility, if you pardon the repeat of words, is really important. We've seen that one size fits all doesn't work. You have different roles, you have different functions, different teams, and they all have different requirements. And flexibility shouldn't come at the detriment of the functioning of an organization and a team. Otherwise, it really defeats the purpose of it being a great tool for a company. Adding to that, when you think about the current situation with COVID today, like it's still very chop and change, right? So you see what's happening in Australia, some of the states go into lockdown and then come back out. What that means for businesses is the environment is constantly changing and it's changing fast. If companies are too rigid about how flexible working should be done, then they just won't be able to keep up, right?
Mm.
One of the key elements that we saw from our research on how to make flexibility flexible is to remove barriers to flexibility in order to encourage take up by as many employees as possible. And employees are more likely to move to a flexible model if they don't have to go through, for example, a heavy HR process, but if they can work something out directly with their boss and their team. And what that does is they generally end up finding a flexible arrangement that works for them, works for the team, and works for the business, and as a whole makes flexibility worth it and really live up to its purpose.
What are some of the best practices you think then to try and create a sustainable model of flexible working?
Yes. So in the research that we did, we identified five best practices, but like to spare you the long list, I'll just mention a key one. And the first one is the one that we've just mentioned. So the flexibility of flexibility, really critical because it will encourage the take up of flexibility and its sustainability over time. The second best practice that I think is the most critical is role modeling. If the business executives, so male and female, so it's not only for females, if line managers lead the way on flexible work, be it remote work, part-time, flexible hours, you name it, then flexibility will be seen as a normal way of working for all employees. If my boss does it, then I can do it. Why not? And it will create the right culture to encourage as many people as possible to work somewhat flexibly according to what works for them, what works for their team, and what works for the business. The last best practice that I like to mention is for businesses to really put in place the right capabilities, tools, and practices to really support their employees to work flexibly. ensure that they have the right technology at home, for example, to do remote work. Ensure, and that's very important, that line managers are trained on how to engage the team members who have flexible work arrangements. Check in with employees frequently to know how they're doing. So pulse surveys to know how they feel about their work, how they feel about flexibility, and really measuring that impact and the sentiment of employees towards it is really important.
At the risk of simplification, though, Agathe, how then can women challenge gender stereotypes today if they're not there, so to speak?
Yes.
There's the danger that they might not be there, right?
Yeah. And look, it's a great question because it's obviously very tied to the International Women's Day theme this year of choose to challenge. My top tip is to be yourself as much as you can, but at the same time, to ensure that people, and in particular your male colleagues, see how effective you can be just the way you are. If I take my personal example, I don't need to be loud. I don't need to interrupt people to convince my clients. I don't need to be overconfident to show that I know what I'm talking about. Over time, trying to find ways to show that the personality that you have is actually as effective as some
loud mouths.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I obviously really don't want to stereotype and say that these are not female qualities, but this is, for example, this would be more related to my style. You're a woman and you want to be loud and overconfident, then it's great. It's just not the way that I am.
Right.
My other tip is to find your allies. And those allies can be of all genders. They don't have to be female. But really find the people who will help you challenge these stereotypes. And they can be found in many people. It can be that line manager who trusts you to present to senior executives. It can be that friend or colleague who has your back when you're being excluded from a situation, or even worse, that you're being insulted or misrepresented. And really finding that crew of people who support you and help you challenge, I have found over time, has been extremely important.
Agathe, thanks so much for your insights today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Agathe Gross, partner at Bain & Company. She also leads Diversity, Equity and Inclusion in Australia. This is Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.